Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The COVID-19 pandemic has provided a deadly serious reminder of just how interconnected our planet has become, but the phenomenon obviously goes back much further. Nearly a half century ago, for instance, an act of the United States government spurred by a North Carolina politician helped assure that poor women across the globe would be denied access to essential reproductive health services. The Helms Amendment, named after the late Senator Jesse Helms, prohibits the use of U.S. foreign assistance funds to pay for abortion as a method of family planning, and has tragically been overinterpreted to ban abortion counseling and referrals, post-abortion care, and abortion in cases of rape, incest, and when a woman's life is in danger. Recently, in an effort to learn more about this destructive law and other similar efforts, I got the chance to chat with Dr. Anu Kumar of the Triangle-based global reproductive health nonprofit, IPASS. Well, Dr. Anu Kumar, welcome to News and Views. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've been leading IPASS now for a while. It's one of the most important worldwide organizations when it comes to working towards reproductive health and freedom for women around the world. Gosh, almost a half a century it's been in existence. Now tell us a little bit more, tell our listeners a little bit more about the important work that IPASS does.
Yeah, you're right. IPASS is 47 years old. We were started in 1973, and we have a singular focus on access to safe abortion care. And we've been focused on that for all these many years. And, you know, the reason we work on that is because so many women continue to suffer and indeed die from consequences and complications of unsafe abortions around the world. It's one of the leading causes of maternal death in the developing world. And so IPASS has really been focused on this topic for so many years because we know it's preventable. Women don't have to die from unsafe abortion. And indeed, women, fortunately, in the United States and in Europe and other wealthy countries do not die. And so we know we can prevent it, and we know and we have the tools in order to prevent it. And so we've been focused on this issue for so long because we think it's absolutely fundamental to public health, that is women's health, but also to women's rights. And so we now have offices in about 18 countries around the world and work both at a country level, but also at a regional and global level.
Well, talk to us about why things are probably in many ways even more acute now with the COVID-19 pandemic. It has a lot of negative effects in a lot of ways, but some people may not have thought of how it's affecting, having a negative effect on women and their reproductive health and the possibility with domestic violence, things like this. Talk to us about what you're hearing about and seeing around the world.
It's interesting. So definitely a very negative impact of COVID. As you rightly point out, the incidence of domestic violence has dramatically increased. And as significantly, supply chains have really been disrupted. So most people, you know, may not think about supply chains when they think about women's health and rights. But, you know, women, couples need access to contraception. And when contraceptive supply chains are disrupted, just like all the supply chains are now disrupted because of the pandemic, then access to contraception is also unable. Women are unable to access contraception. So that results in unintended pregnancies. Because so many women are living in places where they cannot freely move about, they are not able to access safe abortion care in public health facilities. And even if they are, and even if they can get there, so much of our health systems around the world right now, including in this country, are totally focused on dealing with COVID, that they have prioritized COVID. And fortunately, that means that health services that are that would have gone for abortion or contraception are not now available. So, you know, this has had a major impact on women and women's lives and, of course, families. We have a recent report that actually shows that even a 10% decline in contraceptive use would leave an additional nearly 50 million women without access to modern contraception. And that would mean 10% of the safe abortions would become unsafe abortions. It could lead to an increase of 3 million unsafe abortions and more than 1,000 more maternal deaths. So real consequences for real people beyond the epidemic. You know, the way that we see it in our work at IPASS around the world is that this is really an epidemic within the pandemic itself.
Mm-hmm. And of course, even before all this, let's say in 2019, a year before the pandemic took effect, things weren't perfect to begin with. We had some restrictions here in the United States that are placing limitations on our ability to help women around the world, right?
Many limitations, yes. So there are three main policies that your listeners should be familiar with. The first is the global gag rule, and that's the one that gets talked about a lot because every 4 years or so, whenever we have a new president, there is the president will issue an executive order, and depending on whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, they will either, if a Republican, they will institute the gag rule, or a Democrat, they will repeal the gag rule. The gag rule is a restriction on what foreign non-governmental organizations that receive U.S. funds, what they can do with their own private money. And so the gag rule says that those organizations cannot engage in any abortion-related work, like even if they raise that money entirely separately and has nothing to do with U.S. funds. In the current administration, the global gag rule has been significantly expanded, and it applies to all U.S. global funds, global health funds, and that is approximately $12 billion in aid that is impacted. Now, the thing to remember about the gag rule is that it comes on top of an existing practice or existing policy called the Helms Amendment. The Helms Amendment, which was started in 1973 and it is named after the senator from North Carolina, Jesse Helms, the Helms Amendment is an amendment to the U.S. Foreign Assistance Act. And it exists in both statute and is also reiterated every year by the State Department in the Foreign Operations Appropriations Bill. The Helms Amendment states that U.S. assistance funds, foreign assistance funds, cannot be used for, quote, the performance of abortion as a method of family planning, end quote. Unfortunately, the Helms Amendment has never been clarified as to what that actually means, what those words actually mean. And so it has been overinterpreted as a total ban on abortion-related services and information. So we already have a situation and have had since 1973 where no U.S. foreign assistance funds have been used for abortion any place, any way, anyhow. And on top of that, we now have the global gag rule that says that foreign NGOs can't even do it with their own money. And so we have a total lockdown, essentially, on abortion provision with U.S. funds or even associated with U.S. funds. Now, the Helms Amendment, you know, I mentioned before the gag rule is $12 billion.
Right.
The Helms Amendment affects nearly $40 billion in funding just in the last fiscal year. So this is funding that's applied, that's used to support governments, to support nonprofit organizations. It's funds that are put together within what they call pooled funding mechanisms. That's like, you know, let's say the American government wants to do something together with a UK government or with another foreign government and pool the resources together. The Helms Amendment applies there as well. And it applies to humanitarian funding. So let's just get real about what this means. I'm sure many of your listeners have heard about the Rohingya refugees who fled across the Burma, the Myanmar border into Bangladesh. When those nearly million refugees left Myanmar and went to Bangladesh, they were the recipients of a huge amount of U.S. foreign assistance. Nearly $820 million of U.S. government funds have gone to support the Rohingya in this crisis setting. But not a cent of that goes towards providing safe abortion care. And I want to point out that in Bangladesh, abortion is legal. It is legally allowed, yes. And many of the women that have been fleeing those situations are victims of rape and sexual violence and have arrived in refugee camps pregnant and in need of and wanting to terminate those pregnancies, you know, pregnancies as a result, as I mentioned, of rape. IFAS has been really fortunate that we've been able to work. We have an office and work in Bangladesh, and we've been working with the government of Bangladesh to help them provide safe abortion care for those Rohingya refugees, but not through any U.S. government funds.
So this family planning language, this vagueness of the Helms Amendment, makes it so that even if a woman was in dire physical need for abortion services, she's got dire health problems, this language is being interpreted to basically prevent any funding from going to help her, even though her life could be at risk.
That's exactly right. It doesn't need to be that way because actually, as written, the Helms Amendment does allow for the provision of abortion information, counseling, and even what's called post-abortion care, that is the care of women who have induced an abortion or have miscarried and have complications due to spontaneous abortions and miscarriages. That is permissible under the Helms Amendment, but it's not provided. Women who are pregnant as a result of rape or incest, or if their life is in danger, could also receive care. But again, that is not provided because of this fear and overinterpretation of the policy as a total ban.
So you mentioned a third regulation or law that you wanted to highlight as well.
Yeah, I wanted to point out to listeners that the Helms Amendment is, you know, the overseas counterpart to the domestic policy called the Hyde Amendment.
Right.
And the Hyde Amendment, and they're, you know, about around the same time when they're both brought into policy and law in the U.S. And the Hyde Amendment, of course, prohibits federal funding for Medicaid coverage of abortion care, except when pregnancy is a result of rape or incest, or when the woman's life is in danger. That policy, though, is, of course, discriminatory, and it denies women insurance coverage for safe, legal abortions in this country. So the thing that I wanted to point out is how similar these two policies are. And one of the ways that they're really similar, and the gag rule as well, is that they target Black and brown women. These policies are not just about reproductive rights and reproductive health and women's health. They're about race and about racial justice. It is Black and brown women in this country and Black and brown women overseas that are targeted by these racist policies.
And so, as it is so often the case in so many areas of the law, people of color are disproportionately affected in a negative way. And white women, for the most part, who tend to be more well off and have more means at their disposal, as a general rule, not exclusively, will have a much higher level of access to the kind of reproductive health care that they need.
Exactly. And the Helms Amendment is particularly egregious because, of course, it's going after women who don't vote. These are American policies that are made by American politicians, and they have a life and death impact on women overseas, you know, women living in rural areas or any areas in Africa and Asia. Those women aren't voting in our elections. But what we do and how we vote in this country has a direct impact on their lives.
We're coming near the end of our time with Dr. Anu Kumar of IPASS, but I do want to ask you about some good news, which is that there has been legislation introduced in Congress to repeal the Helms Amendment, right?
Yes, there has. It is indeed very good news. So 47 years this policy has been in place, and for the first time in those 47 years, we now have a bill that's been introduced, led by Representative Jan Schakowsky, to repeal the Helms Amendment. It is called the Abortion is Healthcare Everywhere Act, and the bill would strike the Helms language from the Foreign Assistance Act, and importantly, it would replace it with proactive language on the importance of comprehensive reproductive health services, including the provision of abortion services, training, and equipment. So instead of taking away, this bill is actually promoting a positive vision of what U.S. policy could be and what the U.S. government could do. So the bill suggests that the U.S. government could have a policy that supports safe abortion as a critical component of comprehensive health care, that abortion is made widely available and integrated into other types of health care, and that the U.S. government should work to actually end unsafe abortion and promote safe abortion services.
Well, we will be watching it very closely. We realize it might be a tough road to hoe in the current Congress, but there's a very good chance that things could change in 21. We'll be paying very close attention. Thank you so much for the fine work you do for the women of the world, Dr. Kumar. Could you let our listeners know if they want to learn more about IPASS and how perhaps they might even want to make a contribution or help the cause that you all are advancing?
Absolutely. Please go to our website at www.ipass.org. And if your listeners would like to learn more about the Helms repeal efforts, they can visit repealhelms.org.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kumar. We'll talk to you again soon, hopefully with some additional good news in this important work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time and interest in this topic.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views.
A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.